Serve It Cold, Episode 22. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios.
What? Good. Damn. Hello? No, it's Vera, goat. Yeah, we got it in New Orleans last night. Ate at Chef Paul's. It was very nice. Nice talking to you too, goat. I'll tell him you called. Bye. What the hell? Hello? Narlene. Good morning to you too. No, Johnny's not back yet. He went to meet Sonny. What time is it? A while ago. That was the plan. Narlene, did you, by any chance, call Johnny's number? That's what I thought. I'll let him know. Bye now. What? Hello? Oh, so that first call was you. Very funny, Gojo. Yeah, Johnny told us Latimer got run over last night. Yes, we're all doing fine. I'll tell him to call when he comes in. Bye now. Hello? Ken, I thought you were headed to Houston. Well, thank you, yes. We would love a pound of Blue Mountain for the room. That was mighty thoughtful of you. Hold on, I got another call. Okay, I will. Johnny Speed, I swear, I'm gonna kill you. Hello? Good morning, Tommy. Well, ordinarily you'd be talking to Johnny, but he left his phone in the room this morning. Okay, I'll tell him, but if he calls, it will be from his grave. You too, Tommy. Bye. Jeez, I can't even put the damn thing down. Hello? What the? Hello? Now this is just plain ridiculous. Hello? Butch! Well, it's about time you called. No, you dialed Johnny's phone, all right. Yep, Gojo told us. What? When? Where? Yeah, I'll let him know.
Not wanting to disturb the sleeping princess, I opened the door to our suite very carefully. Only to be bombarded with the sound of Lillian Boot's voice belting out, "Be glad you ain't dead," at about 75 decibels. I made my way on into the room to find the bed empty. The bedside Bose radio was obviously tuned to the French Quarter's own WWOZ. Vera's power book sat on the desk that provided a view of Royal Street, and beside the computer there lay the tray filled with even more croissants and palmiers. I was making a beeline toward the wet bar and its steaming coffee pot, when I heard the bathroom door behind me open.
You better listen good to that song, Johnny boy, because you might be dead by the time I'm through with you.
Honey, you're awake.
Of course I'm awake. Weren't you the one who woke me up in the dark of night and poured coffee down me before you spent 15 minutes banging into furniture and slamming doors? Why wouldn't I be awake? But actually, that's not really why I'm awake. You want to know why I'm awake, Jonathan Speed?
I knew better than to break the silence and just nodded.
What did you forget when you left this morning?
I padded my way through my pants and vest pockets. Wallet, phone, Palm Pilot, handcuffs, wasp, pens, knife, backup knife.
Oh, quit slapping yourself, Johnny. You look like some kind of biker third base coach giving signals to the runner on first. You forgot your damn phone.
I pulled out my phone, but before I could wave it at her...
And you took my phone.
Sure enough, the phone in my hand was dark blue instead of black. Colorblind in the dark. So I take it you got a call.
A call? This damn thing's been ringing all morning. While you've been out playing detective with your little kung fu buddy, I've been working your damn case.
I started to say, wushu, but quickly thought better of it. Instead, I led with, Vera, I'm sorry I picked up the wrong phone. Thank you for taking care of the calls, honey. Are there any new developments in Catherine? She scowled at me suspiciously, but said,
Let me get dressed first. I'll be out in a minute. Pour me a cup of coffee and don't you dare eat that almond croissant.
I poured her a cup of black coffee and adulterated another cup into submission for myself. When I found a raspberry croissant among the pastries, I relaxed a bit. Vera wouldn't have stooped to order Yankee Berry if she were really mad. The coffee was great. The taste was familiar, but I couldn't quite place it. And when Vera emerged again, apparently dressed meant a towel around her hair and one of the guest house's terry cloth robes around her body, I raised my cup toward her with a questioning look.
Jamaica Blue Mountain. Ken sent us up a pound this morning.
Oh, yes. I remember that taste now. She took a sip and said,
It's been a long time since we could afford this stuff.
Do you miss it, honey?
No. I'm more than happy with what you're roasting these days.
Vera, you know I wasn't talking about the coffee.
I know, Johnny. We're doing fine. We're almost out of debt. We have a house we love, a yard full of dogs, and really good friends. What else can any poor white Mississippi country girl ask for? And we'll do even better in the future. And I'm doing fine, Johnny. I'm not ready to leave the mini mart behind just yet. Now, you want to hear about what's been going on or not?
I took a bite of raspberry croissant. Okay, shoot. Vera flipped open a Royal Guest House writing tablet and checked her notes.
Well, you got calls from Gojo, Goat, Narlene, Gojo again, Ken, and a Tommy. There was also a hang-up if a wife answers call, for which I'll give you the benefit of the doubt and assume that it was Lurker. All of these calls boil down to, are you still alive, what's going on, keep in touch, glad you're still alive, blah blah blah. Then you got a call from Butch, which was, are you still alive, thanks for the pictures, oh, by the way, Ray Ragonet was found dead inside, apologies to Leonard Cohen, the famous Blue Stratus.
I almost choked on my croissant. You've got to be kidding.
Well, yeah, I did add that part about Leonard Cohen. He just...
Vera, is Ragonet dead?
Yep, two taps to the head, small caliber.
I had a little chill run down my spine. I'd been telling Yellowhead the truth at breakfast. Damn. Just about time I figure I know what's going on. Something happens that just tears my little worldview to shreds. Did I just spend the morning telling Ragonet's killer to clean up and get out of town? To paraphrase Miss Congeniality, fuck it! I can't! I stopped my little fit in mid-tirade because Vera was frozen in mid-sip, her coffee cup still touching her lip. She put down the cup in extremely slow motion, her eyes glued to her PowerBook screen. I leaned over enough to confirm that, yes, Cindy's portrait of Vera had worked its way through the queue and was now serving as her desktop. I went back to peacefully crunching on my croissant while I waited for her reaction. It didn't take long.
You son of a bitch!
Now, Vera, I don't...
Why in hell didn't you tell me that the art show opening you went to was Cindy Altman's?
Saying... I just forgot to didn't seem to be a workable alternative, so I tried. I wanted to surprise you.
The hell you did? You lecherous old fool.
Now, I don't think I'm old enough to qualify for that remark. She laughed, but she quickly brought her hands up to her sore ribs, which brought more laughter. I was doing my best not to laugh for a number of reasons, but it was hard. She sat in front of me, sort of bouncing and hyperventilating, with tears streaming from her eyes. After about a minute of this, I decided that I'd best just keep my mouth shut for as long as possible. Bouncing gradually slowed, and she managed to say in between bounces,
"Johnny, Speed, you'll be the death of me yet."
She looked back at the portrait and became very still and quiet. The tears stopped and the grimacing faded away, but so did the laughter in her eyes.
"Jonathan, I think it's time for me to tell you a story. In the early 80s, there was a house over behind Rose Hill they called the House of Blue Lights. Do you remember it?"
"Yeah, I knew that house, but from a different time. Jeremy and Mandy lived there with about 10 other people in the mid-70s. It was just called Mandy's Place back then, but it was already one of the top party houses in Catherine. I sort of remember that later they had a flashing blue light on the front porch."
"Yeah, actually several strings of flashing blue Christmas lights were on the front porch. In the blue light days, the house was rented by four women who did their best to uphold the house's party tradition that you old guys established. Lily Banks, Marie Sparks, Cynthia Sparks, and Meg Kelly."
"Marie Sparks? That was Latimer's wife's name, wasn't it? Lily and Marie were roommates who married twins? Well, almost twins. Now who's not telling who?"
"Maybe I wanted to surprise you. No, actually, I just didn't think of it until now."
She paused before gesturing toward the PowerBook screen.
"Johnny, when you saw this drawing, did you wonder how Cindy was able to do it?"
"No, not really. You see, the show was called The 40, and it had 40 people from Catherine. You know, the Catherine 40. And of course they were all naked. I knew that she didn't have all these people sit nude for her."
"Johnny, did you even look at the drawing?"
She pulled her left breast out from under her robe, lifting it so I could see the dumbbell-shaped birthmark on the breast's lower curve. I looked back at the computer, and there was the birthmark that I at least thought I had fairly exclusive rights to for the past 2 decades. I stammered. "But there was Tam Beckett and..."
"And Becky Sims and Joe Harless."
I was floored. After a while, I was able to get my mouth shut again. She waited for me to say something, but I truly couldn't think of a thing to say. After a very long minute, she pulled her robe closed again and said,
"Those weren't the Catherine 40. Those were the House of Blue Lights 40. You see, Cynthia Sparks became Cindy Altman. Marie and Cynthia were sisters from seminary. Meg and Lily grew up in Sanford. I don't remember seeing the Granthams at the house, but they are from Collins, aren't they? Everybody involved seems to be from Covington County."
It did seem that a large proportion of everybody was from Covington County, including my very own Vera Hill. "Okay, let's get back to this Blue Lights 40 deal. Just what are you talking about here?"
"You know what it was like back then. Even before the Blue Lights went up. I think it was a Marsha Ball show at the Toad that inspired the lights. Even before that, people would just show up at the house every night after the bars closed. After all, people had been doing that for more than 10 years, right? But the 40, or the people who became the 40, were the hardcore, the people who were still there after 2 or 3 or even 4 in the morning. There never really were 40 of us there at once, but one time we did that little Catherine 40 exercise you do with people. The few people that were there at 4 o'clock one morning sat down and wrote the names of all the people that we remembered being in the house past 3 o'clock at any time in the past. We tallied them up, and they totaled exactly 40. Marie was as talented with a camera as Cynthia is with her pencil, and she decided she would shoot an exhibit called The House of Blue Lights 40. For a while after that, every night at 3 o'clock, everyone still at the party had to strip down or leave. Cynthia and Lily were really into this game, and they would pose people while Marie took pictures. She shot black and white and developed them in our bathroom."
"Wait a minute. I'm trying to picture this. A house full of drunk and high naked people, with Lily Banks and Cindy Altman playing director. I just imagine that there was more than posing going on."
"We Wicca like to call it skyclad, but yeah, Mr. Speed, things do tend to move from posing to other things."
I ignored the witchcraft crack. "But, Vera, Judge Harless?"
"Joe Harless is not that much older than we are, Johnny. Back then, he was just a struggling young lawyer just out of law school."
"Oh my God. This is why Harless hates me.
Don't you think he can hate you for just being your own lovable self? Do you really have to blame my youthful indiscretions for your inability to remain calm in the presence of authority? Besides, Meg and I were sort of an item in those days. We didn't take to the group scene very well.
Wait! Wait just a minute. You and Meg Kelly.
Oh, you're gonna throw rocks now? Let's see, why weren't you one of the House of Blue Lights 40? Oh yeah, that would be because you were busy every night drug-seeking and cheating on your second wife, wouldn't it?
No, no rocks. I promise no rocks. Although, if I wasn't there, you can bet my darling wife was. Now that I think about it, just be prepared to hear from my lawyers, Missy. I'm planning to sue your pretty ass for depriving me of 20 years of fantasies.
Joe Harless would love to hear that one in his court. No, baby, I don't think you can find anyone who would call your fantasy life deprived. And if you call me Missy again, you won't live to sue anybody.
Okay, one more time. Can we get back to the Blue Light 40? Sounds like a Kmart special, doesn't it? So, Marie took the pictures for an exhibit. Did she ever actually put on the exhibit?
No, UMAC was way too conservative to allow a show like that on campus. And none of us had any contacts in New Orleans in those days. When things started to get really wild at the house, Meg moved out, and we sort of lost touch with the others. I do remember one thing after that. Someone broke into the house one day when everyone was at school and threw all the pictures and rolls of film they could find into the fireplace, doused them with a charcoal lighter fluid, and set it on fire. It was summer and the flue was shut, so the fire ended up damaging some of Cynthia's early work, too. They thought Meg might have done it, so they showed up at my house. Don't give me that look. Yes, she moved in with me. Anyway, they showed up to confront Meg. It wasn't much of a fight. They took one look at Meg and knew she didn't have anything to do with it. Marie was crushed, but Cynthia was in a rage.
Did she lose all of the photos in the fire?
I don't know. I never said more than hello to either of the Sparks sisters after that day, but looking at this drawing, I would say she didn't lose everything. That, or Cindy has even greater memory than talent. Did you take pictures of any other drawings?
All of them. I reached for my power book and launched the slideshow program before sliding the computer around so that Vera could see.
Wow. They're beautiful, aren't they?
And they're huge, showing her with outstretched arms. That move hurt muscles that I didn't know I still had, but at least I didn't laugh this time. I was beginning to find pain very unfunny. We went through the drawings one by one. They were all images of younger people put into the settings of their contemporary lives. When the image of Tam Beckett glided onto the screen, Vera's heartfelt exclamation was enough to fuel that impoverished fantasy life of mine for several more decades. Maybe I should just let the lawsuit slide. The pictures proved that Vera's theory was right on the button. She could remember all but a few of the subjects as members of the House of Blue Lights 40. I made notes as we paged through, and we ended up with the names of all but three people. Vera remembered seeing one of the three at the house, and he looked familiar to me, but neither of us could come up with his name. She looked up from the screen.
Does all of this mean anything, Johnny?
I don't know. It might mean that we've got 39 more suspects.
Well, at least you're leaving me off the suspect list.
Actually, no. Latimer and Lily are together on drawing 40, but they're already suspects. You and 38 more subjects make 39... Now, you know if you hit me, it'll hurt you more than it will me, honey. She didn't care. She socked me in the shoulder anyway. And we both thought that was so funny. We both ended up on the floor, with Vera swearing at me through gritted teeth.
I promise you, Johnny Speed, that if you ever so much as wave another joint in front of my face, I'll kill you while you sleep.
Yes, that was the funniest thing that either of us had ever heard. When we both calmed down to where we could breathe without pain again, I tried to make some kind of sense of this new mass of information. Okay. Marie Grantham was killed on the coast by a hit-and-run driver. We know that Raginit was implicated in a hit-and-run scheme of some sort, maybe with the Dixie Mafia. Is it possible that Marie was killed because she took the wrong person's picture? Did she use the pictures to blackmail someone? And even if she was killed because of taking those pictures, what does that have to do with the three murders this week?
You're doing great on questions, but I don't think we're going to find any answers down here. I truly love this room, but I think it's time we go home, Johnny.
I rolled over to a chair and started to pull myself to my feet. You're right. I'll see if I can muster the troops. Where shall we eat lunch, my dear?
I don't know, but I'm starving to death.
Where turned out to be the Praline Connection on Frenchman in the Faubourg Marigny. This place cooks the kind of food everybody's grandmother used to cook. Well, everybody's grandmother who lived in the rural South and who could really cook. But here they take that grandma cooking and add a healthy dash of spices, another scoop of pork fat, and a handful of sugar. It's grits, greens, and guts cooking at its finest. I started with a massive platter of fried chicken livers with hot pepper jelly before diving right into a plate lunch of smothered pork chops, white beans, and collard greens. Just pass me that pepper sauce. I'm sure that the rest of the crew ate something, too. Sure, they had to. The only thing I really remember is Narlene sitting across the table from me while I was scarfing up my chicken livers. Suddenly, she broke into laughter. I looked up at her, and she paused just long enough to say,
Jonathan, you're stoned!
I had steeled myself to resist all expressions of mirth by this time, but when I heard Vera chuckle, then groan, I almost lost it. I shoved the platter to the middle of the table and said, Have a chicken liver and be peaceful, Rap. One of the connection's best features is that it has a candy shop right in the restaurant. After all, they are the Praline Connection. We armed ourselves with bags of confections and were headed back to the fast food capital of South Mississippi well before noon.
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, dancingcatstudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like, with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at dancingcatstudios.com. So, just when you think you have everything under control and your release schedule holds no surprises, the logic board goes. In the middle of mixing down the current episode. The night you have to post. Yep,
We got hit with file corruption, but fortunately a good backup and a little hard work on an older, slower system pulled our fat out of the fire. We're very sorry for the delay getting this episode out, and we thank every one of you for staying with us. By now, you all know that events are rocketing along. We're into the homestretch, ladies and gentlemen. Hang on for the ride. If you can't wait for your mystery fix, though, you're in luck, because there are plenty of fine audio works available at podiobooks.com every day. From novels to nonfiction, from adventure to poetry, and even more detective novels, like this one.
You first met Jack Palms last summer in the world's first noir crime podcast novel, Jack Wakes Up.
It's a cold world and this is life.
And now Seth Harwood is bringing him back. Yes, Jack Palms is back on the scene to shake it down in Jack Palms 2, This Is Life.
Cold world and this is life.
Available at SethHarwood.com. And if you haven't heard it already, check out the smash hit podcast, Jack Wakes Up, before it comes out in print on March 16th, Palm Sunday, 2008. SethHarwood.com.
Thanks for staying with us to the end. Standing in for WWOZ's regular playlist this episode were two very fine Michelle Malone songs, Miss Mississippi and Beyond the Mountain, and we repeat the first one here for your enjoyment.
Yeah! Woo! Come on, Mississippi! I was a run out of town, I'm never going back. I was a run out of town on the Southern Grand Prix Pike. Come on, Mississippi, take me for a ride. Come on, Mississippi. Roll me around, honey, crack my back. Come on, Mississippi. Come on, Mississippi. I will run out of town, I'm never going back. I will run out of town on the Southern Pacific Pickback. Fire on the train. Mississippi, I'm Mississippi, I'm following you.